Today I'm chatting with Paul Culliver, who is a stand-up comedian and podcaster in Melbourne. He runs Mammoth Audio, which is a podcasting network, and hosts many stage shows around Melbourne, including his Paul Culliver Controls the Media shows, and he's done a bunch of stuff around Melbourne over the last few years. He used to work for Absolute Radio in London, which I am so jealous of. I'd love to be able to say I've done that. And Paul's got some killer stories about his time over there in the UK as well, and also some stories about working at Sin and Channel 31 and in community media before he sort of moved on to bigger and better things. So thank you so much to listening to From the Internet. This is episode 19. My name is Ryan John, and this is Paul Culliver, and we start the chat about what I think, even if he doesn't, is a pretty amazing feat. So, Paul, is it right that I'm reading that you have done or are doing a podcast a day for a year?
I've done it. Did you say have I done all right doing it?
Yeah. Well, no. How have you done it?
I definitely did it. Whether I did all right is, I think, that's up for contention.
Well, so I do this podcast once a week, and as you probably know, doing the podcast and chatting is glorious, but chasing people up and uploading and editing, like, it's a process. Like, how the hell did you do that for a year?
I didn't have a full-time job, which helps. I don't know if you could do it if you did. I think I calculated, like, this is just some rough maths, but every episode, because I did 365.
Yep.
They averaged out to about half an hour each. Which means that if you assume maybe half an hour of production, uploading time, chasing guests, and whatever, and it's probably more than that.
Yeah.
That's an hour. That's 365 hours. That works out to about 10 weeks of full-time work.
Far
that
out.
I put into doing that. So one-fifth of my productive year, in theory, was making that podcast.
Why did you give yourself that challenge? Was it just the fact that you wanted a challenge, or that you had 365 cool ideas that needed to be heard? Like, what was the initial foundation of, I need to do this?
I didn't know I had that many ideas, but I think I thought that perhaps if I pushed myself, because I hadn't heard of anyone doing the challenge with podcasting, but you've probably heard of people doing it with writing a blog post or
yep.
taking a photo of themselves or something
yep,
or
yep.
drawing something every day. Like, there's a lot of those challenges out there. And I guess I haven't really followed any of them that closely. Maybe I should have found out what happened to those people.
Are they still alive now?
Yeah, success or mental health otherwise. Maybe it was a terrible idea. But I figured I wanted a podcast, and which, like, every comedian does.
Yep.
And I was like, I don't have a good reason for a podcast, which is also pretty much every comedian.
Yep.
And then I went, oh, well, why don't I just do one every day? And over the course of the podcast, maybe I'll discover what kind of podcast I want to make. So it was, like, incredibly self-indulgent.
Yep.
But also at the same time, I was starting up sort of a podcast producing service / podcast network. And I was like, well, the best way to learn fast about creating a podcast, because I already had radio producing kind of abilities and experience, I wanted to learn specifically about podcasting. I was like, well, what better way to learn about podcasting than to do one a day and see what kind of numbers come in, see what kind of guests I can get, see what kind of presenter I am as a podcaster. So it was a big learning experience from pretty much every aspect of making a podcast.
Do you think that is the best way to learn? Because, like, whilst we've never worked together, I guess we'd be in similar circles and our friends do similar stuff. But I know a lot of people that spend a lot of time thinking what the podcast will be, thinking about what the YouTube logo will look like. And they spend so much time on all this stuff before they even start doing whatever it is that they do.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just, and like now over sort of a few years that I've been in the media biz, I'm like, kind of what you just said, just start doing it. Worry about that shit later, because who knows, you could spend days and days and days working out the podcast logo on the dish. You might do two episodes and go, oh, actually, that's pretty shit.
Yeah, I produced a podcast called Small Business Big Marketing with a guy called Tim Reed, and he had a saying about it, which was, well, not so much a saying as a very perfect phrase, which was production versus perfection. And it's all about finding that balance. And to be honest, in this day of, you know, we've probably heard this line a million times, but, you know, fast media and everyone's a media creator and anyone can do it. But the reality is anyone can do it and anyone can learn how to do it. Sometimes the people that are getting the million hits on YouTube or whatever, they're the people that have actually made something.
Yep.
And some of the people haven't put a million hours into making that thing. And to be honest, the great thing about the internet, with a lot of stuff, if you make something, put it out there and it's shit, you just delete it once you've got better stuff up there. So, you know, there's so much stuff that the bad content can easily get lost if you can supersede it with better stuff. So you're better off creating and learning.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true of, like, most media careers, I think. Like, you learn the basics maybe in community radio or even studying. I never studied media at uni, but I guess that's what you do there. But it's not until you're actually on the job in, like, a professional media organization that you learn, like, 10 times as more because you're actually there at the grindstone doing it. Not to say that you learn a lot in community radio.
Yep.
I think we both have, but even more is learnt when you're actually doing the real job for realsies.
Yeah, this is actually the perfect segue into, because I guess the first time I saw you was doing, it was sort of a late night style show on Channel 31.
Oh yeah, would that have been, was that like years ago?
Yeah, like
the Inquiry?
A long, yeah, the Inquiry, I think it was the Inquiry.
Yeah, yeah, that was 2009, 2010, we did about 20 episodes all up.
Yeah, and how'd you find that in terms of, A, like, I know a lot of people hosting, like, a late-night style show is their dream job, but also in terms of what we were just talking about in terms of just putting on 20 episodes and chasing your tail and learning how to make TV on the fly?
Well, you know what? I was so incredibly lucky. I was, like, how old would I have been? I was, like, 20, 21, putting that show together, and my mate who co-produced it with me, Antonio Cafasso, he was a year younger than me again. So the fact that we look back now and we were like a bunch of effectively like 20-year-olds putting together a broadcast television show with like a team of like 50 people, we were like, why did anyone listen to us? That is crazy. But I was very lucky to work with him because he actually knew what he was doing, which
good.
Was helpful because I didn't know that much about TV.
Yep.
But also, and the whole crew and everyone was amazing, but particularly people that I worked closely with were the cast and writers who were the same people. And many of those people have now gone on to be writers and personalities and comedians that are building quite a name for themselves in the media industry. So we've got people like Andy Matthews who... he writes for, he's written for The Project, for Sean McAuliffe.
Yep.
Who else is on
is
there?
Is he also the guy who is in a TV ad which is apparently getting sued?
Side issue. I don't know about the sued thing. I'm assuming you're referring to the Nimble Bunny, which is he.
Yeah,
that's
yep.
true. But there's a whole bunch of... Basically, what I'm saying is, like, 5 years ago, I had this really, in retrospect, this amazing honor to work with people that have now got on to be, like, they've proved themselves in that they are working as real comedy writers, and I got to work with them, and somehow they, 5 years ago, listened to what I said when I said, hey, write a sketch about this, or yes, you can do this, or no, you can't. So I think in terms of learning to work with people, and learning to work with people that absolutely knew their comedy chops,
yep.
From an early age, I guess, was pretty cool. Yeah, I learned a lot. And I kind of look back at that footage and some of it I like cringe at and some of it I go, hey, I was all right for the age that I was. And then
yeah.
some of me just goes, oh man, let me do it again. I do it so much better.
Yeah, it's sort of like I remember doing a breakfast radio show on Sin and being like, oh, I'm pretty bloody good at this. I could pretty much do any radio job quite comfortably, I'm quite sure of. And then even like 6 months later, you'd listen back and you'd be like, holy shit, this is so embarrassing. I can't believe I let this, like, A, come out of my mouth, but B, come out of my mouth with a microphone in front of it.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of, I wouldn't say lucky, but I think watching yourself would be even worse than listening because it's right there. You can't escape from it.
You know what? It's only like 6 months since the Comedy Festival this year, and I had a really good season performing at the Comedy Festival, but I only just now brought myself to watch the video that I taped one night.
Yep.
And it's so funny that I was like, wait, why do I do that with my hands? Wait, why do I say it like that? Like, it was like I had all these notes for myself going, Paul, why didn't you watch this 6 months ago? You could have been like so much better.
It's tough to critique yourself because I think maybe it's just nice, just like I said before, like the ignorance is bliss, like me leaving Sin after a brekkie show and just being like, that was pretty good. and then not asking anyone for advice or listening back, but just knowing that, right or wrongly.
Yeah, I mean, it depends what you want, Ryan. You know, do you want to be happy or do you want to be, you know, good?
Yeah, well, that is a very interesting point. And I feel like I eventually got the feedback I needed because radio is my job now. And if I had have just sat at Sin and felt that I was awesome and not got any feedback, I would still be in an accountant. So sometimes getting those...
Oh, God, those you dodged a bullet. Yeah. I mean, shout out to all those accountants out there. CPA represent. Yeah. Holy.
Oh, man, I was a CA man. I was a CA man, not a CPA man.
Oh, I don't even know. Like, I did first year accounting. I just know to say CPA, and that's like a reference.
And be like, yeah.
It seems like I know what I'm talking about.
It does until now.
Damn it. I don't know, man.
It's like two different brands, I guess, of essentially the same thing, in the end of the day.
Okay, now we're boring the listener.
Let's not get bogged down in accounting chat, despite how much I would honestly love that. So you did a bit of stuff with Sin and Channel 31, and then you were producing some radio in Melbourne for, Cross Our Hearts, MTR, and different stuff. But then randomly I see one day on Facebook that you have won some competition and you are the new intern at Absolute Radio in London, and I could not be more jealous. What the hell was that all about?
I'm still not sure, to be honest. That is true. In fact, I'm looking at my desk now, I can see my Absolute Radio mug, which I
stole.
I guess stole.
Yeah. I was an intern for 6 months. I'm taking whatever my body can.
Yeah. Well, the competition, well, look, to give the context, what it was is basically periodically and hopefully more and more often, various sponsors, various companies come to Absolute Radio and want to advertise their wares. And they don't necessarily just want to buy ads on the radio, like 30-second jingles and such. They want to do a promotion where the hosts on air will actually talk about the products, and there'll be some kind of competition involved, whatever. So that might just be like a, beat the bomb or whatever tacky thing, a commercial radio station might be doing. Absolute Radio pride themselves on doing some stuff a little bit more innovative, a little bit more interesting.
Yep.
And so they went, okay, well, instead of giving away, it was effectively, I'm about to reveal what my salary was for that time.
Yep.
instead of giving away $8,000 in like prize money that you would win all at once, let's take that $8,000 that Orange, I think it was Orange Mobile.
What do you mean you think? Up. These guys paid you. You should know.
You know what? I didn't get an Orange phone. I never met anyone from Orange. It was dire.
That's horseshit.
But they turned what would have been prize money into a salary that they could hire someone at Absolute Radio. So there was all these like live reads and chatting and stuff on the radio all about like... particularly, it wasn't directed at the listeners, it was directed at the listeners' kids. Like, hey, does your kid want to break into media?
Yeah, right,
your,
cool.
Blah, blah, blah. Because that was the demographic. It's like 30 to 55-year-olds. And you're invited to apply. I was just looking at radio jobs, like, on the actual listings in the UK, because I was moving over there at the time. In fact, I think I was already there. So I applied for the job, thought nothing of it, went to America... for 2 months, and then got this email one day while I was in like New Orleans saying we'd like to interview you for this job. So basically what it was 6 months. It was a 6 month contract to go do an intern with just the most nondescript job description ever. It was just like, come be in the building for 6 months and we'll pay you and we'll teach you some stuff.
Yeah. And were you, and even though it was nondescript, were you just like, holy shit, this is it?
Yeah, it came at the perfect time when I'd got to London, I'd done a bit of sightseeing, doing the usual, Australian backpacker thing.
Yep.
But I went over with the goal of working in radio, preferably in London, otherwise somewhere in the UK. And I started looking and that job popped up and I went, I've got to apply for that. That's amazing. Especially because probably most Australians wouldn't have necessarily heard of Absolute Radio, but I'd somehow come across them several years earlier. I'm a huge fan of Matt Berry, who people might know from like The Mighty Boosh or a few other comedy shows, like Dartmoor and His Dark Place. He's the announcer on Absolute Radio.
Okay, right.
And he had a podcast a few years ago that was like the most absurd, random, crazy podcast. And I was listening to it, not knowing what Absolute Radio was, but being a huge fan of the podcast. And then so like fast forward 3 years later, and I'm like, oh my God, I could work at this place. I could meet Matt Berry. This is amazing.
Yeah, sick.
And in the application, or in fact for the job interview, they actually wanted us to pitch. 11 people got shortlisted out of about 650 applicants.
Yep.
And they wanted us to pitch them a radio show that could fit anywhere on the Absolute Radio, program grid, personality, format, all that sort of thing. And so what I actually pitched to them was Well, it was straight after the London Summer Olympics. And so, of course, Adam Hills had been over there doing last leg for the Paralympics on Channel 4 over there, and that had been really successful. And so I pitched them Adam Hills as like a late night show. And it turns out that little idea, that little nugget of an idea, is what got me over the line. Because apparently they were basically like, if anyone just came along and said Ricky Gervais or Russell Brand or anyone like really obvious like that, they were out of the process.
Yep.
Whereas I didn't know many British personalities, so I pitched
I'm just going to go the Australian guy.
Yeah. And it turns out that worked. And I haven't met Adam Hills before, but whenever I meet him, I'm going to have to thank him because he got me a job in London.
Shake his hand quite solidly. That's such an awesome story. Now, now that I work in commercial radio and you've done enough in radio to kind of understand this question, it's a great idea. Why give away a prize when we can use the money and get an intern and have fun with him and make him do stuff and blah, blah, blah. But when you actually rock up, you get the job, it's your first day of work, is there kind of a vibe that sales sold this great idea and now the content team's like, shit, what do we actually do with this guy for 6 months? Or do they have
I don't know who you've been speaking to. I don't know what.
Have I hit the nail on the head or is that, or what, like what happened?
Yeah, my first memory of all I remember doing on my first day is having my photo taken. And mind you, like, you know, rocked up at, you know, 9 a.m. start.
Yep.
And I'd been living the backpacker lifestyle. So, like, that morning start was, like, rough. Like, first day on the job, I had no sleep.
As someone who gets up at 4 a.m. in the morning, I can tell you right now, I have zero fucking sympathy for you being tired at 9 in the morning.
Well, look, the breakfast starts came. I've done them before.
Yep.
So I absolutely appreciate that. But, which is like, fine, I'm happy to get up at any hour to do radio. You kind of have to. But then on the first day without notice, the photo, like the photo. And I was like, oh, God, okay.
Jeez, that intern looks a bit haggard.
Yeah. Funnily enough, turned out to be a pretty good photo. I'm pretty sure it was on my Tinder profile for a while.
Oh, sweet.
But then that on my first day, and literally I think they just took me into the studio with Russ Williams, who was the morning presenter. He was on Absolute Radio for about 22 years as the morning presenter before it was even Absolute Radio. They basically just brought me in there, sat me down and said, talk to Russ, he knows everything, and then left me for like the next 2 hours.
Far out.
So that was my first day. And then it was really up to me to just kind of push them into... They got me to do a lot of odd jobs and odd tasks and kind of had to prove myself because I was hired as an intern despite having had a lot of experience already.
But I guess that's up to you then to be like, yeah, like you can just sit there and do nothing, or you can be, you know, hassle people and be like, guys, I actually know how to do stuff, so use me. I wanna do things.
Yeah, I probably did that too much. I think they were like, okay, hotshot, Australian.
We get it, champ.
But I think I did all right. And I somehow managed to wrangle my way onto The Breakfast Show as their second producer by the end of it. So it was 6 months originally as the contract. Somehow I convinced them to keep me for another four. And,
great.
Yeah. So it was,
the goal, like, I know if I got it, like, obviously, like, or something similar, I would be, A, like, this is really awesome. But then, like, sort of deep down, I'd be like, I've got however amount of time it is to try and get myself more work. Was that always sense? And the fact that you did for an extra form, like that's kind of showed that you obviously did a good job. They wouldn't have given you that if you weren't doing anything. But like, did you know that from day one that you were like, here we go?
Yeah, it was, man, like I was loving it, but I was hustling my ass off the entire time just to get that more work. Because they didn't have the answers. I mean, just as any organization trying to figure out its budgets and, whatever else, because, you know, naturally, like, I was there effectively free for them for 6 months. And then
of course, because the client paid you. Yeah, not...
Yeah, so if they kept me on, all of a sudden, that's money out of the budget that wasn't there. And Absolute Radio at the time, I think, was not turning a profit, so it wasn't like they were just throwing cash around.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it was very much me just busting my ass to prove myself. And I can... Look, I can tell you a story about how my time at Absolute Radio came to an end, if you want.
Please.
And it's entertaining in that I was given more and more responsibility. I became second producer on Breakfast. And then one day we had an outside broadcast, an OB, down in Kent in England. with a listener. It doesn't bear going into why they were in Kent, but for some reason our breakfast team went to Kent.
Yep.
And I was meant to just sit in the studio as the second producer and just do like social media, text messages, whatever, stuff like that. However, at 4 a.m. that morning, 2 hours before we went on air, there was a massive power failure at the station. Everything went off air and everything was just catastrophic. Like, it was basically, and the thing is, if people don't know, breakfast radio is the cash cow of any radio station. If you're not on air playing out ads,
yeah, you're losing thousands and thousands of dollars just being thrown down the drain.
Exactly, exactly. If they're not broadcasting from 6 a.m., they're losing money hand over fist.
Yeah.
And so there was this mad dash to get the station back on air. We're actually located, or where they, not there anymore, Absolute Radio are located probably, oh, I don't know, it's probably about a 10-15 minute walk from, what's it called, Global Radio, which is Capital FM.
Yep.
What was XFM, now Radio X, I think. Like one of the, it's basically like a really big radio station, kind of like the Southern Cross or Stereo.
Yeah, would that be considered a competitor of Absolute Radio?
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing, the reason I bring it up is because they have agreements whereby if your studios go down, you can use each other's studios.
Oh, yeah. That's
so we
nice.
Were like preparing to potentially do the dash, like physically run across to the other studios to get our show to air. In the end, the person that was meant to be pressing the buttons, doing the panel offing, or as they call it in Britain, tech offing,
yep.
Ended up having to reboot all the systems because he was the tech guy.
Yeah.
My manager turns to me and says, can you panel op? And look, technically, yes, but had never been in like doing the proper breakfast show.
Yeah.
So I got thrown in. So 3 hours of very stressful, like, we had no aircon, so in a studio of buzzing and humming lights and everything,
yeah.
Like 30, 40 degrees. I don't know how hot it got in there. Stressful, our systems kept shutting down, trying to keep this show on air at our studios. 3 hours went by, okay, the show is 4 hours, it goes 6 till 10. Got to the 9 o'clock news. Now, to play out the 9 o'clock news involves playing out, like, three different bits of audio from three different faders, plus like cueing this and pressing that, and it's very complicated. There's a lot to do.
Yeah.
And so I got to 9 o'clock news, hit one button wrong, didn't hear that I was playing out the news okay, panicked, started pressing more buttons, swore quietly to myself, I dropped the F word, finally got the news to air. Wasn't till about 3 minutes after the news had finished that complaints started rolling in. Oh. It turns out one of the buttons that I'd pressed in my blind panic was the microphone that was in front of my mouth,
oh.
Which means that I had said the F word live on radio across the UK to potentially 15 million listeners of Absolute Radio.
So what? So the news is going out and they just hear this like, oh, fuck.
Oh, hang on.
Is that the right
impression of it?
Is that the right? Oh shit!
That is actually exactly right. Have you heard this? Have you heard the audio?
I haven't. That's two random wild guesses about this Absolute Radio venture that I've just nailed.
Very good. That is actually almost exactly it. It's Christian O'Connell being confused about what's happening because I didn't cue him properly. Me dropping the F word, and then I think the news cuts in. And as my colleague said later, one of the most efficient mic breaks they've ever heard.
And that was one of those thanks for your time? Like,
well, here's the thing. I thought it was. I thought, like, that was the worst day of my life, I think.
Yeah.
I thought that was over. I thought it was the end. They brought me in for, like, an HR meeting a couple of days later, sat me down. As it turned out, look, I should make this clear to any potential employers, while swearing in a radio studio should never be done, but I'll say is rife anyway in the radio broadcasting
yep.
community.
Correct.
A lot of people do it, but you shouldn't. It was sort of found that there was enough things about that day, like the massive power failure, the fact that I wasn't meant to be the panel op.
Yeah.
All these things that kind of said, you know what, unfortunate set of circumstances, not really your fault,
yep.
despite what happened. So I didn't lose my job over that. However, and I only found this out once I finished my job up on the Monday. So this was on a Friday. On the Monday, it was announced that Bauer Media was purchasing Absolute Radio. They were taking it over.
Right.
I did not make the... Now, we found that out on the Monday, but I didn't put it together till several months later. But that actually meant that the deal was done on the Friday, which means
yeah.
that on the day they were about to put into paper to do, I don't know how much it was. Maybe it's like a $4 million media deal. I'm just speculating. I'm not sure how much it was. But a multi-million-dollar media deal, and someone had to come into the room and go, oh, just by the way, just so you know everything about the station that we're buying, that you're buying, we did just drop the F word live on air.
Oh, and do you reckon that they go, oh, we're just about to buy this awesome, really slick production. We're going to pay $10 million. And they tune in, they go, you know, I think we'll give you $7 million.
I don't know. I mean, because I saw a lot of concerned men in suits behind glass windows. Like behind glass doors in conference rooms all that day.
And what, it turns out it was the deal, but you just thought they're talking about the guy that's wore on air.
Yeah. I just thought it was me the entire time.
Oh,
and then somehow I managed to... Well, I may have misled you. That didn't lead to my downfall. However, the fact that Bauer Media was taking over meant that there was a lot of people, unfortunately, lost their jobs over the next few months.
A lot of belts tightened when the big corporate comes
and
in.
And so I will be honest, my contract sort of ran out and they didn't have a place for me. But then within a few months, there were so many redundancies made that I went, oh, you know what, even if I'd held on for an extra month or two, I would have been gone anyway because they really cut it down, as any media organization buying out another media organization does, because you know, you don't want to duplicate your services and such.
And for the record, Bauer paid £22 million for Absolute Radio that day.
Oh, there you go. I don't know why I said $4 million. Maybe that's the yearly operating cost. In which case, I don't know if that's sensitive information. Maybe I just said something that I could get sued for. Oh, well, I'm in Australia. Come and get me.
All right, so you finished that, which that is so funny. Everyone's got those stories. But I think it's actually... Like, because I've done a lot of country radio and regional radio, and that they say that's the place to go and make mistakes. And when you're new, you can stuff up and it doesn't really matter. But as you said, 15 million people across the whole UK, that's slightly different to also Australia. So that was a few years ago now. You're now back in Australia. And when I Google your name, I find Mammoth Audio. I guess just the basic top line, whatever you want to call elevator pitch or whatnot, what is Mammoth Audio and how is that, like that's all you or that's a part of something you're doing or what is that exactly?
Mammoth Audio is a podcast network. It is a home to, I guess, all sorts of podcasts from pop culture to entertainment to sports. It's sort of like a bit of, at the moment, I say ragtag in the best possible way, group of podcasts that are all doing really interesting things. There's a lot of comedians. We have, so just to run it down, we basically have Grizz and Tiz from Way Downtown, which is our first ever podcast, and they're kicking goals with podcasting about basketball. So they do NBA and NBL.
Yep.
And so they've like had amazing guests. Like they get people that are like the Aussies playing over in America in the leagues there and
stuff. Yeah, awesome, awesome.
So they're killing it. We have Swipe Night, which is all about internet dating with Rose and Kirsten, and they're like just amazing, and people are flocking to that, and that's only a few months old. Scammapalooza with Nick J. Johnson, who is kind of the one of Australia's foremost kind of experts in scams, but also an incredible comedian.
Did you say expert in scams?
In scams, yeah.
How do you become an expert in scams? That's fascinating. I must hear this immediately.
Yeah, so he chats to people every week. That are either experts in scams or are scam artists themselves, or they might be... He had one guy who's like a sheriff in the US and his job is to check like sideshow like games to check that they're fair and legal. So this guy knows like everything there is to like putting a ball in a clown's mouth to shooting a bottle over to getting a ball in a hoop. Like he just knows everything about what makes that game fair. It was fascinating.
Oh, that's awesome. So how does it work with, like, when you say it's like a podcast network and I'm looking at the website now and it looks all pretty and all the ones you've mentioned are there plus a few others, what benefits, like, being a part of a network juxtaposed to someone sitting in their bedroom recording something and just chucking it online, how does that all work?
Yeah, well, I guess one element is just that I have the production ability. So I'm basically bringing a platform for my friends that are making really good, great podcasts.
Yep.
So if I sort of, a lot of them have been self-starters if they've had the idea themselves and I've gone, hey, if you want to do this, I'll make it happen with you.
Yeah, cool.
And the idea is over time to sort of build it as a network to have cross promotion, so you can have ads on each other's podcasts to promote each other's podcasts. And, you know, so if you're a fan of one Mammoth Audio podcast, you might like what we're doing on other podcasts. And in theory, we'll also start to sort of sell ads across them to kind of get a little bit of income back for those hosts putting in all those hours to create free content.
Yeah, cool. And how do you see, the fact I'm doing one and talking to you on one now, but most people that do podcasts are also big podcast fans that do lots of others. I'm one of them. I love podcasting, but there is always that, yeah, but how do you get paid, or is it worth it? Or like, so where do you see personally podcasting being in the next 5 or 10 years? Because they are so popular and they're growing in popularity, but there's still that kind of elephant in the room of how do we make this viable for our time?
Yeah, I think it depends. Like, people go in it for different reasons. If you're going into podcasting with the sole idea that you're just going to make money and that's why you're doing it, sorry, I missed that.
I just said, ba-boom. You're out of luck, son.
I think you want to be engaged with what you want to talk about. I think you want to, like, already get joy out of making that podcast.
Yeah.
Or you know, for a lot of people, it's successful for them because comedians, it might boost their profile, or if you're an expert in a certain area. So I have another podcast network that's sort of more professional business related. So the guys on there are talking about small business, or they're talking about interior design, or they're talking about construction, all these very, like, kind of niche areas, but it's about putting themselves forward as professionals that know about their industry.
Yep.
And making professional connections. So they're not necessarily getting sponsorship money, although some of them are sponsored. There are benefits far and beyond just getting whatever the rate is that they might get per podcast for spruiking something else.
Yeah.
They're in effect spruiking themselves and proving themselves as experts.
Yeah, well, I obviously don't have any sponsors on this, and I don't think I ever will, but I love talking to people and just like hearing their stories and stuff. So for me, it's just a lot of fun, and I find it quite interesting. Do you think... And what you just said then, yeah, that makes total sense. Do you think that will change, though, in 5 or 10 years? Like, will podcasts maybe take over your live traditional radio as is now? Or do you just see it always being like this sort of side niche sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Serial, which is probably started about a year ago now,
yeah,
sort of billed as the first big blockbuster podcast. And we'll see how season two of that goes when it comes soon. But...
Hey, just on that, is season two a follow-up of the same story or a new story?
No, I think it's a new... I think they're currently... I don't know, you'd have to sort of do the Google search,
yeah.
But I think they're doing... They haven't announced it yet, but I think they're doing two new cases of whatever kind.
Okay, righto, cool.
And they're doing that at season two and three, so they're producing it like at the same time,
yeah.
So that we don't have to wait as long, I guess.
Yeah,
but cool. I mean, that got so much press. It not only got so many listeners... But because of that, it then got so much press about it, which got it so much more into the mainstream. And I think it'll go from, like, podcasting is the place for niche content, niche areas to be explored, and that's amazing. The idea of podcasting as a niche pastime, I think I think it'll get bigger and bigger. I don't think it'll ever overtake radio.
Yep.
Per se. I think radio will always be around. It's funny the number of radio jobs that I've had, and someone more senior in the organization have said, "What are you doing working in radio, kid? Radio's dead. Get out of here."
See some old sales guy who's struggling for budget, going, "Oh, it's the industry."
Well, I think it's like people that just know that I'll have their job in 10 years. I think that's what it is.
They're trying to scare you out now before you get
too
close.
Yeah, I think so. So I think it will never take over, but I think it'll. It'll become more and more prominent. And you can see with, obviously, big media organizations and small, it's a compliment to what they do. You know, a lot of their content they put out on podcasts and stuff because they know the more places they can find listeners and audiences, the bigger they can, you know, make their reach.
Yeah. Tell me what you think of this idea. And this isn't like a groundbreaking idea, but it's an idea I've had. So I'm, like, not many people listen to breakfast radio from 6 till 9. I reckon most people might listen for like 20 or 30 minutes while they're in the car or doing whatever it is that they do. Do you think it's possible that if you got up early enough or stayed up late enough, whichever it was, that someone could essentially do a daily podcast and release it at 6 a.m. every morning and it's only 15 or 20 minutes long, and that could become people's new, what do I listen to on the way to work? Or do you think that having callers and being live is still a huge advantage?
You know what? I'm pretty sure there's a podcast that already exists that's a little bit like that. I'm trying to remember the name of it. But it was basically some guys that were, I'm pretty sure it was the Breakfasters on Triple R, which is community radio in Melbourne.
Yep.
That have sort of the same team on every morning. I think, I don't have all the details, but I think it was like they were doing the breakfast show, and then they stopped doing that, and they decided they still wanted to do something. And so they did basically what you're talking about. They do like 20-minute, 30-minute things every day, and it's sort of released by, yeah, sometime in the morning. So it's definitely an idea. I don't know if it's, yeah, it's all about building the audience, I guess. But I think the thing about breakfast radio is that it's there, it's simple, it's in your car, it's on the, you know, it's in the kitchen. It's like, it's just there.
It's so easy.
Yeah, and it's like, whereas, like, which is why probably radio will never die. It's like, I think it's all about probably what is, like, it would be interesting if, say, breakfast radio started. Also, there's no interaction as well.
Yeah, the lack of callers would suck, yeah.
And you don't get sort of live news. So it's, you know, it's different mediums. I think that there's probably plenty of people that go to work every morning and listen to podcasts and don't listen to the radio anymore.
Yeah.
But I think probably creating a breakfast show just as a podcast is, I don't know, is this something you were pinning your hopes on? I'm not sure.
No, I don't know. I always just, because I think it's more about the theory that people don't listen from 6 to 9. And I often, I'm like, oh, no, sometimes there's a big story, the biggest story of the day, and you're like, all right, well, we'll put that on at 8:10 because that's like prime time. And then I kind of think, but if someone listened from 6 till 7 and we didn't mention that big thing, like that we're not doing our job. And so there, I always, not like have arguments, but there's always this, how often do you hit the same topics over and over? And then I went, well, maybe if we just, if people, you gave them the podcast because you know they're going to listen from the start to the end for 20 minutes instead of not knowing when people tune in and tune out. That's how that theory came about. Not for any like business such, if I got fired, maybe I'll try this thing.
You know what this is? This is clearly you just being like unhappy that someone would tune off listening to you.
But how dare you not listen?
You must listen to everything I create from start to finish.
Sort of. I often actually say, well, it's more of a one of those like quality over quantity debates.
Yeah.
And I often say like it would be fantastic to, and like I couldn't afford to do it. Like, and no, my company couldn't justify paying for it. But imagine if I could do a 1 hour show once a week. Like, I still spent the same amount of time in it. So just like the skits would be perfect. Like everything would be reduced to the second and it would just be so tight and so slick. That would be really like, you'd be really proud of it instead of going, oh shit, we got to fill 3 hours. What are we going to do?
it sounds like you need to go work for Radio National. I think that's where they do that. And they're very successful with their podcasting as well.
Yeah, they are.
But you'd really lose, and they're going to use a radio term here, you'd really lose out on TSL.
Can't forget that TSL. Yeah,
managers love TSL.
Yeah, I guess that's for me as someone, and I guess it's sort of not as common anymore, but I like skits, and you would understand that they take a lot of time, and sometimes you put so much hours into something that lasts for 50 seconds, you're like, God damn it, I want people to hear this real bad because I spent so much time making it.
Yeah, hey, I feel you.
Yeah, enough of me whinging about skits. I got a couple more questions. What would be the... sort of, let's not say goal, but let's say dream. Like dream, not necessarily job, but maybe like, you know, lifestyle and what sort of jobs might entail in that for you.
I think just a manageable heroin habit would be great.
If I could earn enough to cover that.
Yeah, I think so. Just like, I think I'd like enough money to just be able to get just really messed up on whatever drugs or alcohol I'd like, and then to be able to afford the Uber home. I think that's all I need, really.
That'll get it done.
And then, like, but also then to employ, like, a dietitian or a nutritionist or a trainer or whatever, that they put in enough work just to keep me alive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then, like, the rest is just hedonism. I should make it clear that I don't do drugs.
Yeah, just asterisk.
I will if I make enough money.
Yeah.
But that's my ultimate dream lifestyle. But But I think in terms of work, I mean, I'm absolutely loving doing standing up comedy.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. I'm starting to put together my plans for the comedy festival in Melbourne. I'm also heading across. Oh, I'm heading across to Perth. I'm going to be doing Fringe World.
I'm an hour and a bit out of town. Last year, I did a couple of things at Fringe with Dave Warnocky on his Facty Fact show.
Oh, yeah.
And I was on the panel, and that was like one of the most fun times I've had. Perth Fringe is so much fun.
Yeah, awesome. I haven't been across before, but I'm going to be doing that. I'm going to be there in late February.
You're cool. And so, is that with your, I know we haven't actually touched on when you, because you do some sort of like panel type trivia shows, is that right, with the Controls the Media, or that's just more a group of... Because I always see these pictures come up with multiple comedians for like this week's show. So what's that exactly?
Yeah, it's like a comedy quiz show about the news. So like, yeah, pretty similar to like Good News Week or the Chasers Media Circus, which is on at the moment.
Yeah, and is that what you're going to bring over to Perth?
Unfortunately not. No, we're not doing that. I definitely wanted to do the stand-up comedy. Cause that's sort of my main, I want to say bread and butter, but as for making any money out of that. But it's sort of my main thrust at the moment.
Yep.
And Controls of Media is a lot of work, so I kind of didn't want to take on two shows for a festival I hadn't been to before.
Yeah, fair enough.
So that shows, you can go listen to the podcast now. People can search Controls of Media or just my name for that podcast. We've podcasted 8 episodes now, and they're all amazing.
Yeah, cool.
But I'm going to let that sit for a bit and just see if I want to do anything else with it, because it's like a lot of work to write the questions and book the guests and all that sort of thing, yeah.
You sound similar to me in that you have more ideas and want to do more stuff than you have time for.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if I have that many ideas. I think I get like one idea and then a year later I go, well, that was fun.
What's next?
What now?
Yeah. Yeah, cool. All right. And I've done stand-up like only a handful of times. And when I speak to people, they're like, oh, you just got to do it like pretty regularly for like 5 years and then you'll start getting all right. And I just go, you know what? I don't know if I got time for that. especially when I don't live in a city. I can't hit an open mic every week without driving 2 hours to Perth and 2 hours back.
Yeah,
and I've done that a few times. So
you literally have an open mic every morning.
That is true. It is slightly different, stand-up to radio.
Yeah,
that's
a bad play on words, really.
You were saying before, you did Inquiry, that TV show, when you were like 19 or 20, and that was in 2009. So let's go back to that time. If you could give yourself, like, if you now could tell yourself back then any advice, what would it be? Because obviously the media landscape changes so much. I know a lot of people are like, I want to be a famous YouTuber. And then you go, yeah, you realize they've been doing that for 5 years? And they go, oh. Actually, they say exactly what I just said about stand-up comedy. But I know a lot of people go, oh, I wish I'd have started 5 years ago and stuff like that. So if you were to tell yourself anything, or if there's anything you wish you had started doing or stopped doing when you were younger, what would it be?
Yeah, that's a hard one. Because, I mean, to be honest, I mean, part of the reason why, like, I feel like I'm just starting to break through on a whole lot of different fronts.
Yep.
Because I kind of do chop and change, and I haven't done the one thing for 5 years. I stopped doing stand-up while I was doing radio in the UK, and I only just started podcasting, and I stopped doing the TV, and I've only revisited a little bit of that reason. Like, it's all over the place. But part of me is like, oh, I'm not, like, huge and famous and really successful in this one particular thing. And so potentially my advice to myself would be like, focus on this thing because that's what you love or that's what you're going to love.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, well, but I don't regret any of the experience. I'm like, I've got some amazing, like my last 5 years is just like, holy shit, like all the just the sheer number of things to do, not even counting drilling down into thinking about what those things are.
Yeah.
is incredible. And that'll, you know, I look to get a little bit, whatever. It all goes into making who I am. The one thing I'll say is that what I did, and this is probably the only thing that I would tell myself, this is very specific advice, was that when I was finishing up at Absolute Radio, I started looking for new jobs in the UK in radio, and I spent like hundreds of dollars getting train trips all over the UK, because as it turns out, if you've worked on a breakfast show for a national radio station in the UK, turns out pretty much every local radio station is happy to meet with you, because they're like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And so I went and had like 10 meetings, had somehow got interviews for fairly significant roles. And then halfway through that process, and having taken like all these days off at the end of my tenure at Absolute Radio and everything, I went, oh, actually, No, I've got things to do back home. I've got comedy to do, and I've got like maybe podcast, like a lot of creative ideas. But I went, you know what? Home is where I have to go.
Yeah, right.
Next. And so the only thing is that I got to see a lot of the UK on a train, and I probably didn't need to. But it was that process of meeting with those people and finding out what was possible to realize that at that time in my life, I didn't want any of that, as it turned out.
Yeah, right. And you didn't realize that at the time, or obviously you did eventually, but...
Yeah, it took me... Well, I spent all the money before I realized that. Because it was... I mean, I've been very lucky that I've always been able to chase kind of what I'm wanting to pursue and what I think is going to make me happy in terms of career and whatever else.
Yeah.
Which, you know, not everyone is afforded that. And so early in my life, I'm happy to do that because how else am I going to find, you know, the right thing to do? And so it wasn't until I was up for a job that was going to be sort of what I considered the most senior producing radio job I could have got at the time.
Yeah.
I was in the running for it. And I realized even if I got that job, that's not where I wanted to go with my career.
Yeah.
That's when I pulled out of everything else and went, nah, I got to go home.
No, I'm done.
And it was that thing of, like, in hindsight, I guess I'd tell, you know, whatever, you know, 23-year-old Paul, go, hey, just save a couple hundred pounds and, you know, go see Doctor Who exhibition or something. I don't know. I don't know what nerdy things I'd do in London instead. But that's a very specific, that's not even life advice, that's just a very specific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so Paul Culliver, it's C-U-L-L-I-V-E-R, you can search on Facebook or Twitter. What's your main sort of, where do you post most of your stuff, or just all over the place?
Yeah, Twitter and Facebook. I'm trying to be a better Twitter joke writer. I'm trying to add more jokes on Twitter.
I often think I wish I could have a spare hour a day to set aside to write jokes and tweet about it. I reckon it would be good process. Yeah. Like, I think if you tried to write 10 jokes a day over a year, you'd get really good. Like, it's one of those things where you could get really good at it by practicing it, but you just don't have time.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's funny because I've just, like, recently discovered some friends of mine that I vaguely kind of know from kind of the comedy community or whatever, and didn't know much about them, and they weren't even necessarily performers, but it turns out they're, like, hugely Twitter famous, and they post, like, 5 times a day with, like, great jokes every day, and I'm like, who are you? Yeah. How did this happen? And I'm like, it really makes me want to step up my game, which is always a good thing, of course.
Yeah, but, like we were saying before, so much things I'd want to do in any given day, but only 24 hours plus I'd sleeping time. Paul, congratulations on everything so far. Good luck. Looking forward to seeing you in Western Australia, which will be exciting at Fringe.
This is great.
Fringe next year. As I said, you can check out Paul on Facebook and Twitter, and there's heaps of links to everything that he's doing, and of course mammothaudio.com.au as well. Thanks so much for your time today, mate. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. It's been fun to chat.